Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
As I see it, since the beginning, they've chosen a fall guy and they've stuck with it, or stuck with him, Anton. Now, I know Anton can be a pain, but he's my pain. I live with him. Anton's just one of these people. He gets an idea, he just happens to be first. There is nothing here that we have they don't have, and in fact they have better now. And then what they do is they come here and their eyes everywhere, because they just come to spy, to find something else to moan about. Because what they then do is go back and say, oh, they got this, they've done that. Is this some kind of jealousy? Because we can do it, we found a way to do it. What? I don't get it.
There you go, that's a clip from Eden. That's running on Channel 4 Monday to Friday this week at 10 p.m. Niamh Hassel has been digging into that. Niamh, good afternoon.
Hello.
Eden, I kind of was under the impression Eden was never going to be screened because it was a disaster.
It was screened back last year, and there was only 4 episodes screened. So I think the viewing figures went down to 800,000 from over a million. So Channel 4 kind of pulled the plug from it. But we heard about it in March, that the contestants, there was 23 of them that were stuck on the Scottish Peninsula. And the whole idea was that, you know, if they're there with limited supplies, and the challenge was to build a new society from scratch.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a good concept and you think that it would work, but it really, really didn't. And when they emerged from this, you know, supposed utopia, which turned into a dystopia, they found out that it wasn't aired. You know, they also found out that Donald Trump had gotten elected and Brexit had happened in the meantime. But, you know, so this was something that, you know, everyone was like, God, they've spent a year of their lives doing this. I mean, there was only 10 in the end as well. So, you know, 13 is a huge drop off for any show. Mm. So everybody was wondering what happened. So Channel 4 then, they put the feelers out, and what they did actually was very, very smart, and they repackaged the show and they renamed it Eden Paradise Lost, because they said everything got very, very dark amongst the contestants. So they've been kind of peddling this out in trailers for the last couple of weeks. So everyone was, you know, my interest was really spiked in it, and they kind of said it descended into this kind of Lord of the Flies style scenario, you know. So they said that things got very dark, and that's why we decided not to broadcast this. So what they did was then, they condensed it. They put it to 5 episodes, so starting last Monday. We're in the midst of it at the moment, and they kind of showed what happened. So the setup was that they were on this island. There was a cameraman there amongst them, one of their own.
One of the 23.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His name was Ollie. He was filming everything. But there was also, I think there was 47 set cameras put all around the place. Now, there were producers, but they were on the other side of a lake. And for the contestants to leave, they really had to trek, I think it was about 10 to 12 kilometres to get to any kind of form of civilization that there were other people around, you know. So they were very, very isolated. But we're kind of, as we're watching it all week, we kind of see what happened. And it was, I kind of thought it was like a cautionary kind of tale of Brexit about to happen, because, you know, it's all well and good to think that you can do, you can give everybody a different role, and they can, you know, there was a hunter, there was a boatman, you know, there was someone who was looking after the garden. But things got very clicky very quickly, and a hierarchy was established, because it all centered around the food. Because, you know, the whole idea was that they were able to forage, hunt and fish. And they were right on this beautiful beach. It looked so idyllic, you know, where there was, you know, a load of mackerel that were in plentiful supply, but they just couldn't catch any for a long time. The hunter was really bad at hunting. So
so these roles were assigned randomly, or
well, they were all chosen for a specific kind of set of skills. You know, there was an ex-army officer there that you would think, you know, would be, you know, very good. And he was the guy who actually took on the, he took charge of the food supply, because they were given dry food stores, as, you know, that would last them for 100 days. But he decided quite quickly in that they weren't very good at getting their own food. And so he doled out, it was like rice, porridge, and they rationed it out so they could last for the whole year.
Mm.
So what you were watching then were 23 people who only ate rice and porridge were starving and got very, very hangry, and it just descended into something quite dark quite quickly. So what the people who were in charge of the food, they kind of formed their own group. There was like a core of maybe 4 to 5 alpha males. Two of them branched off and decided to live by themselves in the woods. So this one guy, Anton, went, and another guy, Raf, followed him. That's the guy you heard in the clip. And there was a lot of animosity that grew between the larger group and the two guys. And last night, the group decided that they were going to vote these guys off because they were causing problems. And it was quite nasty the way they did it. They concocted this plan where they decided to get them drunk. The other thing that they also had, they used to make their own home brew, which was 20% proof, and got them absolutely balubas, like falling down, collapsing unconsciously, balubas. And they decided that they'd get them drunk in the homebrew, instigate a fight. One of them would get Anton, the outsider, to punch him, so that that way then he would be forced to leave. So it was, it was incredible watching it, because like what you're watching as a social experiment to see if a new society could be set up was this kind of group dynamic that formed where people were very nasty to one another. And, you know, women were completely subjugated. It was, you know, they were the most of the drop-offs that left, because the roles that had been assigned to them, there was one woman.
Who assigned these roles, by the way? Or did they decide that themselves?
They were chosen, like, because they would have been a good gardener, or they were chosen because they were, like, this guy Jack, who was the hunter, he was, you know, he's hunted in the past, so he was the guy that was there to be the hunter.
So the producers would have...
Yes, exactly.
Right, yeah.
So this woman was assigned to do the garden, and nobody was helping her. The garden was 1.5 acres, and it was overgrown with weeds, and they would all go up and complain to her that this is a mess, the state of this, I do it this way, you're not doing it the right way. But nobody would help her. So the men then decided on Tuesday night that they would take on the manly roles, as they call them, and the women should do the more womanly roles. So it was kind of this medieval viewpoint that women should do the washing up and men should do the hard labour. And, you know, I mean, to be stuck 24 hours a day for a year on with nothing left to do. I mean, you had to build your own shelter and you had to, you know, go out fishing. The women wanted to be involved, but they just weren't allowed. And then it got really uncomfortable when you were watching it, because you were watching these women and the men who'd formed this locker room kind of speak all the time. And they were talking about passing the women right in front of them around for sexual pleasure, and who would you take first and what would you do there, and the women were asking them to stop, like, and they just wouldn't. So, you know, tonight we're going to see you know, what happens in the intervening time, where I think there's about 15 of them left now, so we're still 5 to go. A lot of them left because of health problems, like a lot of the women stopped menstruating because of the lack of food, you know. So like tonight, I think it's kind of centered around the hunting. They get a little bit better at it. They do have animals there as well that they can slaughter, but only when they're of age. So they've been waiting, we're 5 months in now at this stage, so the animals will be of age. But you just saw a shot of tonight's show where it's, they have a kind of a hunting lodge and they have skulls up on the walls of sheep and various other animals, and they're talking about stinking, rotting flesh. So I think this is where the Lord of the Flies element will really come into it. So it's very clever of Channel 4. It's very well done. They do it in that style where they have a lot of the Channel 4 style shows where, you know, they have they do a piece to camera after the event and they talk about what happened. Everybody is very candid in it. You know, there's been several interviews that the contestants have done since the show was finished, and they said that, you know, they weren't bullies, and, you know, they clearly were. You know, they clearly were bullying people out. They were actively doing it. They weren't sexist, but they clearly were, because you were witnessing it before you. But I mean, it is 365 days that have been edited down to 5 hours, essentially, that you're watching.
A lot of people text in and say this sounds horrific. why would you want to watch a show with people being nasty to one another? The people who took part in it, were they the normal types that you'd find in reality television shows?
No, not at all. I mean, like, it was like the anti Love Island. You know, it was everything that you've seen on Love Island, where you have these puffed up, you know, big lipped, you know, silicone induced happy chappies, you know, but these were far from it. I mean, these are the kind of people you would expect on survivalist shows, you know. I mean,
right,
think
but actually what I meant by that was at the usual very low level of self-awareness.
No, they had a huge level of self-awareness. That's the thing. They're very intelligent. You know, these people, you know, didn't, I don't know, I don't think they went into it to be famous, you know, so I don't, there wasn't a big kickoff then about like why it wasn't aired. They didn't go into it for that. I think they literally went in because they were so disillusioned by modern society that they decided to take part in what was framed as a social experiment.
Right. Yeah.
To start their own.
For those, all those given out about Anton, he did manage to erect a form of makeshift sauna. I'd be happy to have nifty camp members if they can build me a spa, says Emer. Tom says, I love the show. The people are just awful. While Anton was strange, the community completely ganged up on him and bullied him. It's humanity at its worst.
Yeah, no, it was very interesting to watch what happened after they ganged up on him, because he was devastated. He really wanted to stay. And I actually really liked him because he was, you know, obviously he had his own mind and the group didn't like that for their kind of group mentality that they had created. But when he did decide, when he was like, OK, I have to go, I've been voted out, himself and Raph, they dismantled the house that they built in the woods and they burnt it to the ground. And this would have been like intensive labour to chop this wood and put it up and erect it. And over on the beach, they were all talking, oh, who's going to live in Anton and Raph's house? Mm. And then they burnt it down. So it was very vengeful. You know, I mean, this was witnessing humanity at, you know, its rawest kind of form, you know. Very interesting to watch.
Yeah. Right. Few bits of TV news. The aforementioned Anthony Scaramucci is going to break cover.
Oh, yeah. Get the popcorn ready. He's going to go on Stephen Colbert on The Late Show on Monday night. And Stephen Colbert can't believe it. He said, I don't know how we got him. We're going to have our sensors at the ready, because Anthony Scaramucci is not known for his clean mouth. He's more known for his potty mouth.
Yeah.
If you listen to the tapes of him talking to the guy from The New Yorker. So it'll be very interesting to see what he has to say. It's his first interview since his 10-day run as communications director with the White House, so I'd be really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's on The Late Show, but I think The Late Show is taped anyway, so they can probably
have the beeps at the ready, though, I'd say. So,
Another piece about James Corden. Now, people know the Carpool Karaoke. It's by a bizarre coincidence, he did have the fella from Linkin Park in it, but they hadn't aired it yet, though.
No, it's really sad. So this is the new series. Obviously, Carpool Karaoke is the most popular part of his show, where they have people going around in cars and singing their songs. And now they've created a spin-off show where Carpool Karaoke, it's just that for half an hour. But Chester Bennington, he died very tragically last month. He filmed a show with James Corden, but James Corden has now come out and said, we will not air it until the family, or if the family think it's respectful to do so. And then afterwards, Chester's widow, Talinda Bellington, she said thank you to James Corden, because obviously it's a very difficult time for the family. They know that pretty much everybody will watch this because it was quite close to his death, and he has a lot of fans out there, and I'm sure they'd love to see him in this, you know, because, you know, you really do see these stars at their best, you know, and doing what they love, which is singing. So it would be very interesting, you know, for everybody to see it. But I think it is right that they wait until the family are certain that they do want to air it, because it'd be very difficult for them.
Right. OK, we did mention Stephen Colbert. He took over his job from David Letterman, who went into retirement and grew a crazy old man beard. But he's coming back to Netflix.
He is. Yeah, no, this is really I'm really looking forward to this, because David Letterman is just he's brilliant. And of course, you grow a beard after doing that show for how many years? You know, I mean, it was probably something he wanted to do all along. So, but he really went for it. He looked like Santa Claus. So it's going to start in 2018. It's 6-episode series featuring hour-long episodes, both with long-form interviews and kind of in-the-field segments. But it doesn't have a name yet. But he's very excited, and he said he's very lucky to be working on this project.
Right. Okay. And is there any sense of what kind? Will it be like what he used to do, or will it be something completely different?
Well, it'd be interviews with celebrities, I'm guessing, but it'd be longer. You know, I mean, The Late Show has very short segments, you know, so this would be something that will really show his prowess as an interviewer. And if he's going out in the field, well, I'm guessing it'll be kind of talking to members of the public and kind of doing little experiments, or that's what I got from it anyway when
saw it. Right, we do have to take a commercial break after that. The £1 billion.
Right now, I am on my way to go and have a chat with a young girl called Ruth. Ruth is a DUP supporter. I think she actually campaigns for them as well, so heavily involved. She's 19, so just started voting, really. Tell me why you support the DUP.
Because I'm a Christian and I agree with all their views.
What are your thoughts on gay couples?
I believe it's wrong. There's no easy way about that. But I have been called a homophobe for it, which is not true, because I have simply said there that I disagree. Like, I know, I read your Twitter, I do know that you're pro-gay marriage and stuff like that. But you know, we disagree.
Tell me what is so wrong when a man kisses another man or has sex with another man.
It's you can't have sex, like, you can't have children with two males. You can't have children with two women.
There you go. That's a clip from the Billion Pound Party. It's running online. You can find it online on BBC Three. It's about the DUP. Obviously, it's Billion Pound Party because of the amount of money the North has received to prop up the Tory government.
Yeah, and this is by Stacey Dooley, who you heard there in that clip. She does a series of Investigates documentaries, and they're for young people. You know, this is for 18, 19-year-olds who mightn't be that well-versed in politics, maybe, but she kind of shows a different side of life, really. So other examples from this series would be mums selling their kids for sex, young sex for sale in Japan, kids selling drugs online is the one that'll be shown, I think, this evening. So she... You know, Stacey Dooley is a young journalist. She's very inoffensive, you know, the way that she kind of travails around and she interviews people, and she's more kind of an observer rather than anything else, because this was Ruth, who you heard in that clip. She was a young DUP supporter, and she was the daughter of Ian Paisley Jr.'s election agent. So when Stacey went to interview her, she didn't really kind of rail against her. She didn't really say, she just kind of let her talk, you know, which was very interesting to hear. Here, because when you're talking to a 19-year-old girl who studies theatre in Queen's University in Belfast, and she has those views, it's very unusual to hear those views coming out of a young person's mouth when it comes to gay marriage and sex. So it was interesting to watch her, but it was very short, her turn in the documentary, because there was no one really from the DUP that spoke in the documentary. She wanted to go out and find voters. But she was there around the time of the bonfires and the marches. And so she was kind of startled by what she saw, by the preparation for all the bonfires that were there. So she spent a lot of the documentary kind of looking around, and she was like, God, you'd never be allowed to do that in England. She'd be in a lot of trouble. So, you know, I mean, it was fairly obvious stuff, you know, where she, and then kind of in between that, they gave kind of a very brief history of Northern Ireland and the Troubles. And then it was kind of intersected by this really kind of banging urban drum and bass music. So it was very palatable, I suppose, to young people. But I mean, for 28 minutes, it didn't really hold much weight. I watched it on the bus on the way in this morning on my phone.
Okay. Right.
So that's, you know.
Well, yeah, was there an attempt to put it, because the DUP and some sections of unionism can seem bizarre to us, and,
sure,
and they're just down the road, and we'd probably be aware of a larger context. So it's probably a bit too easy to come and say, you've never heard of these people, they're weird. And was there any attempt to put it into any sort of context to understand why they are the way they are?
Well, a little bit. I mean, they did show the, I suppose, the division in the North, and they kind of did it in a very short 30-second reel of the history of it. And there was Ian Paisley, you know, screaming into a microphone at some point. Of course there was. But with, there wasn't a lot of analysis. You know, you're not going to get that with Stacey Dooley. Now, she walked around. She does have a very nice style, you know, but sometimes you were worried for her well-being, because she walked into when the bonfires were happening, and there was a group of young guys, and they weren't very favourable about her being there. And, you know, they were screaming in her face, and she was like, did you just tell me to off?
Yeah.
You're just like, get out of there quickly. Yeah. You're not really not welcome there. But, you know, I mean, she does pieces to camera, and she just reacts to what she's just seen. So at one point they said that the Irish flag was like the ISIS flag, and she went, that's quite shocking. It's like, obviously it is.
Yeah.
But she doesn't really kind of delve too far down into, you know, what's really going on.
Mm.
And then later on you would just see one DUP voter called Orange Lil that she speaks to, but it's the only kind of time that you see that the DUP voters might be slightly out of touch with the beliefs of the DUP, because she said that she votes for them because she has no other choice. There's no alternative for her. But she then talked about her daughter, who's a lesbian, and obviously the DUP's views on gay marriage. Stacey Dooley didn't really kind of quiz, she didn't really dig as deep as you wanted it to. But you know, if you're looking to kind of introduce something to someone younger who mightn't really have a taste or an ear for politics, or, you know, who just wants to be explained to what this is in a very remedial sense, this is probably the documentary to watch for them.
Right. OK, yeah. So probably nobody listening. Right. Finally, our third show, Jodie Whittaker, as you know, is the new Doctor Who. This is the show she's currently in. It's called Trust Me. Here's a clip.
Concerns have been raised about you by other members of staff.
I'm sorry.
In the last 6 months, I have received 3 separate reports of bullying.
That's ridiculous.
Including use of disrespectful language, refusing to let your staff leave on time.
I expect my nurses to complete the tasks that I set them.
And humiliating junior doctors.
I'm sorry, who's complained?
They have a right to confidentiality.
Oh, so I can't know who's accusing me?
That is trust policy.
Is it also trust policy to allow patients to lie for hours in soiled sheets? Or leave them without food or water? Or send them home to die?
I'm sorry you feel that way, Sister Hardacre. But it doesn't change the decision of this panel. You're suspended, pending formal investigation. And if the allegations I listed are upheld, there is likely to be further action.
Right, that's a clip from Trust Me. It's on BBC One Tuesdays at 9 p.m. And ironically, perhaps or not, it's about a nurse who pretends to be a doctor.
I know, imagine that. And first of all, I thought that the BBC were going to wheel this out in the middle of their summer schedule, because it's not really the time that you would put a big drama on, you know, because you'd have less viewers, obviously, than you would in the new schedule in September. I thought maybe they're doing this before she appears in Doctor Who, because there was a bit of a kerfuffle about a woman being Doctor Who, if you can imagine it. But I realised very quickly why they put it on in the middle of the summer schedule, because it's just... okay. Jodie Whittaker is very, very good in it, though, I will say. I mean, she is an excellent actress. I mean, a lot of people might have seen her in Broadchurch, the one that was on ITV, and it was shown on later on TV3 with David Tennant, where she plays the mother of a murdered boy, and she does grief very, very well, and she does it, you know, she's a really, really excellent actress to watch on screen. You're kind of drawn to her immediately. So it's a great starring role for her. But unfortunately, the script doesn't really kind of add up to, you know, what you really want it to be, you know. So it's written by a doctor. The guy who wrote this he works in the NHS. His name is Dan Sefton. So, but you can really tell that he works in a hospital by day and writes scripts by night, because it's just a bit wishy-washy. So she plays a nurse called Kath Hardacre. She's, you know, very downtrodden. She's a single mother. She's got like a feckless ex who is financially inept. She's trying to struggle through. She's very disillusioned by her job. She keeps talking about, you know, the conditions in the hospital that she works in, as you heard in the clip there. So she decides that she might leak, you know, this information to a journalist. And you see her in the beginning talking to a journalist about the conditions. And she wants to be a whistleblower, but she wants to do it anonymously. And he decides that he can't run the story because there would be no way to it if she doesn't do it. So instead, she complains to the trust and inadvertently then ends up losing her job on an unrelated matter of bullying, apparently. But it's pretty obvious that they want to get rid of her because she's highlighting the issues. So conveniently, her best friend, this is the whole premise for the show, moves to New Zealand to marry a sheep farmer. So she's done. She's done with the NHS. She's done with that now. And she has a foreboding warning that you wouldn't wish an A&E doctor's job on your worst enemy. And then even more conveniently, just at the end of the party where she has her leaving due, Jodie Whittaker, or Kath Hardacre, she plays, finds her folder that contains her CV, all her university certificates, and her doctor's license. So she takes on the persona of this woman who's moved to New Zealand. She gets a job in a hospital in Edinburgh, and she pretends that she's a doctor. Now, there are cases of this actually happening in real life, you know. So, I mean, it's a very interesting premise, but it's the way it's executed is just... it's not very strong, you know. I mean, Jodie Whittaker's shoulders must be pretty sore because she's carrying a lot of weight on them from, you know, what's kind of a poor storyline. You see really what's going to happen. You know, the journalist is going to be hard on her heels because he's deciding now that he actually does want the story. Mm. He finds her number. She starts, I think this is kind of weird. She starts, you know, entering into a relationship with a very handsome, dreamy, dishy doctor colleague of hers. But you would think that the first thing that he would do would be look her up on Facebook as soon as they've shifted each other, you know, just to see what she's at and what she's about. But like, obviously, she's taken on the persona of this woman who's often feels in New Zealand, which presumably, like, there'll be pictures of her all over the place. And, you know, I just don't see how it can hold out for four episodes. You know, so you could do it in two, probably, and it'd be very interesting. But, you know, this kind of slightly panicked look of, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't see how that can carry through, because it's fairly obvious fairly quickly that she's very inexperienced as the person that she's trying to impersonate, who, when she's interviewed, is told, God, you're way too experienced for this place. And then she goes into the hospital and she's working in the A&E and, you know, as a nurse, we see her, she helps out the junior doctors a lot. And, you know, there's a lot of ineptitude there. And she's very caring as a nurse. And, you know, obviously she's transferring those skills into being a doctor. But, you know, she does one thing where she resets, and it was wincing watching it. I mean, the medical scenes were very well done, but she relocated a dislocated ankle, but she forgot to do it. She forgot to administer medication before she did it.
Rookie mistake. We've all done that. Niamh, thanks a million for coming into us. Niamh Hassell there. We're going to take a break. After that, the conceptual penis.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Party.